Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin? And how did they end? Let's find out on the final episode of the 650s BC, Part 4. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Bernie. I'm so excited for this episode.
I know.
It's war. Great powers going to war.
Big time war going on now. We always save it to the end for you guys. Somehow the decade worked out that way for us.
Yeah. Now, there's conflict. There was conflict in the earlier episodes, but not like this.
Yeah. This is a big one. And we got information on it. We got pictures. We got a comic book. Basically, an ancient comic book.
We got mugs and t-shirts.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta make them for you guys. sorry, so about 8 of them.
Then you have to decide if the t-shirts should say Temti Kuma in Shushinak or Tuman.
Oh, right, right. Oh my gosh, right. We have to do that. We come up with what's your ancient Babylonian name would be. I think it'll be something like what is your sign, right? Your astrological sign and then something else.
Yes.
So, like, for example, my porn name is Fluffy 40 Annie, which is a funny porn name, I think.
Oh my god.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, I want to say that when we mention Tuman, we are actually referencing Temti Kuma in Shushinak. But we are calling him Tuman in this episode.
Perfect. Thank you. At least I don't have to try to say that, because all you listeners by now, you know how I pronounce.
Okay, what's happening?
So 653 is, this is a big battle. This is the campaign against Elam. And this is called the Battle of the Ulai River. And it's also known as the Battle of Tiltuba. This is a very famous battle. I'll give you the background of it. So back in the 660s, Tuman, he took the Elamite throne from his brother after their father died. And if you remember, a bunch of the Elamite royal family, most of all of them really, in court, they fled to Assyria, and Ashurbanipal gave them sanctuary. They were political refugees. And yeah. Tuman, he wanted them back. And it was his brother that was, you know, living with Ashurbanipal, and he kept sending insults to Ashurbanipal through his diplomats. I mean, I would love to read what they are. Like, oh, that's got to be hysterical. I mean, first of all, who would send insults to the king of Assyria? But so he sent all these insults, and how would you like to be those guys? Like, oh, Tuman says you have a big ugly nose or something. I mean, like, oh my god, Tuman says you're a woman and you ride a mare. Just, right?
There's like a pile of Elamite diplomats next to the throne.
Right. Skinned and everything, just standing there. Like, you're the guy bringing the next one. Like, I have to read this. I'd be like, Tooman says you're awesome.
Tooman says you're great.
He thinks you're the best.
So how did Tooman expect this to work? It's like, oh no, Ashurbanipal would go like, oh no, now I'm really hurt. I'm gonna give you your brother back.
Yeah, I mean, what? I don't know. I can't get in the mind of these people. I just wonder if we just went through all these campaigns. I mean, maybe they just think, how could they possibly, you know, fight another campaign? I don't think because I bet you because they didn't have the logistics like the Assyrians had. Nobody could believe that another country could possibly project their power in such a way.
The Elamite sages are like, oh, according to our calculations, they are now out of arrows. This should be safe.
Thank you. But they weren't. So yeah. And there's a famous relief, a big relief that would have been in the, you know, the palace of Nineveh that was, you know, recovered in the 1800s, and it's in the British Museum now, and it's a really chaotic scene, but there's like captions and call outs just like what a graphic novel would be. So it says, hey, kill this guy, or become a hero and help me over here, that kind of thing. So I broke it down, and I know, Dan, you do this the best, so maybe if you could go through what we got here, I think it'll be all right. The listeners will like it.
First of all, you can see that the Assyrians, surprise, have better armor and better weapons. Certainly there is propaganda involved, but I can tell you that historians have picked apart lots of Assyrian reliefs like this one, and they do feel that much of the images of weapons and armor for both Assyrians and their enemies are quite accurate. In the battle scene, the Assyrians are pushing the Elamites towards the river. The river cuts across the scene. Eventually, they are pushed into the river and drown with their horses, carts, and weapons. Then there is a subplot within the chaos about the pursuit of Tooman. First, Tooman and his son Tamaritu fall from their chariot, which has collapsed, and Tooman loses his royal hat. Oh no, my hat! Next scene, they both get up. Tooman has recovered his hat, but he's been wounded in the back with an arrow. So, arrows still working out. The Assyrians obviously still have arrows. And they try to flee towards a forest. But they are soon surrounded by Assyrian soldiers. The wounded Tooman is kneeling down and telling his son to pick up the bow and fight back. The son gets hit over the head with a mace. Maybe he ran out of arrows. An Assyrian soldier cuts Tooman's head off with a knife. I will assume he was killed or mostly dead by this point, because in the image it's like he's sawing it off. Ah, he's only mostly dead. Cut off his head anyway. Now we see the Assyrians carrying back the heads of Tooman and his son, and they take them to the Assyrian camp. There are some pro-Assyrian Elamites in the tent who identify the heads, so the heads are transported to Nineveh in a cart. Yeah, shipping heads to Nineveh.
That's how they do it, in a cart.
Yeah.
Now we know.
Poor Tooman. Next relief is the aftermath. First scene is in Elam. A eunuch is leading Tooman's brother, who will be installed as a puppet ruler as the king of Elam. The Elamites come out of the city and bow down before him. The river is below, showing the dead bodies of the Elamite soldiers floating down. Second scene is the triumph back in Nineveh. Ashurbanipal is sitting in his chariot, and there are two visiting ambassadors from Urartu of all places who come to greet him. Ashurbanipal is parading two Elamite messengers holding tablets with insults from Tooman and showing them to the Elamites as the reason why he attacked Elam. So the insult plan, not the best plan. Next, we see the same two ambassadors from Urartu, and they are witnessing the humiliation of two Elamite captives from the Elamite court. The Assyrians are placing the heads of Tooman and another nobleman around their necks. They are then made to parade around the city with the heads around their necks. Again, we see the two ambassadors from Urartu, and they're watching two more captives have their tongues removed and then being staked to the floor and flayed alive. This was the punishment for treason and resisting Ashurbanipal. I think he's becoming Ashurnasipal II over time.
Yeah.
Despite being a learned man, he's turning more and more cruel. And he's the only one who's close to Ashurnasipal II in cruelty, I think. The other kings have not reveled in it as much as he's doing, I think.
Yeah, it does seem. Dear Carlin has that episode, yeah. So anyway, yeah, go on.
It's really hard to nail down all the dates of everything. Because on one of Ashurbanipal's inscriptions, he describes the Battle of Tiltuba as his seventh campaign. Then he describes his eighth campaign as when he captured the nobles, who it appears are being forced to wear head around their necks. I do think this is probably also in 653, though.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So here is Ashurbanipal. On my eighth campaign, I marched against Dunanu, son of Bel-Ikisa, to the land Gambulu, which had put its trust in the king of the land Elam, and had not bowed down to my yoke. I conquered the city Sapibel, his fortified city, whose location is situated between rivers. He says he brought back Dunanu and his family alive. He also says, I captured alive Masira, the chief archer of Tuman, the king of the land Elam, who was stationed inside the city Sapibel to provide support to the land Gambulu and to guard Dunanu. I cut off his head and beat it against the face of Dunanu, the ally who could not save him. Wow.
That's intense.
So he's beating... what? There's also the office of the chief archer. That's a new one.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that too.
Of course, Ashurbanipal destroyed the city, but not with fire. He says he dissolved it with water. But we had that in Sennacherib's destruction of Babylon as well.
Yeah, probably pent a river through it.
Ah, that will teach them. And in this passage, he talks about the fate of the two messengers who had to send the insulting messages, then wait in Nineveh for Ashurbanipal's decision. They saw the decapitated head of Tuman, their lord in Nineveh, and madness took hold of them. One of them pulled out his own beard, and the other stabbed himself in the stomach with his iron belt dagger. If you were wondering what happened to this Dunanu guy, who just got his friend's head bashed in his face, Ashurbanipal says, as for Dunanu, they laid him on a slaughtering block inside Nineveh and slaughtered him like a lamb. The rest of the brothers of Dunanu and Aplaya, I killed them, chopped up their flesh, and sent them out to be a spectacle in all of the lands. How could it be a spectacle if they were chopped up? It's like here's a piece of meat. That's the
brothers. He sent them out. He sent pieces.
And here's something interesting about this Aplaya character. So Ashurbanipal again. As for Aplaya, son of Nabu Salim, grandson of Merodach Baladan, whose father had fled to the land Elam before the father of the father who had engendered me. After I had installed Umanigas as king in the land Elam, he seized Aplaya and sent him before me. Wow, Merodach Baladan.
Yeah, it's his great-grandson.
Still causing trouble for Assyria.
Yeah.
We don't know if Aplaya was killed and chopped up, but I think he was.
Yeah, I think so, probably. I don't think he was a speed talker like Neko.
Wow, this Ashurbanipal is turning kind of crazy.
Yeah, and there's this whole thing. He has this, there's all these other inscriptions. There's a lot of scholarship on it. They're called Ashurbanipal's Garden Party, and he has apparently has a party with. He has Tumen's head from a tree. It's like, you know, he invites all his friends and people. Like, oh look, here's Tumen's head. Remember that guy who used to say that I smelled bad? Well, look what I did to him. Ha ha.
That's gross.
Yeah, totally. And there's a whole literary tradition about this garden party. But you see, like, Ashurbanipal sitting on one of those, you know, like those couches where you're like, more grapes, you know, you're like laying back, and then like Tumen's head just hanging from a tree.
Okay.
Yeah, the head was probably, they said it was probably reserved and kept as a ritual fetish at the Assyrian court.
Wow, that's something.
Imagine, like, every year he kept sending these nasty messages, and Ashurbanipal's probably, like, ears were steaming with smoke, you know?
Yeah, that other people will probably not send insults to Ashurbanipal now.
No, I wouldn't. I would not do that. So, well, now, you would think at this point, you would think the Assyrians were really exhausted from all this battling in the 650s, right?
And it seems like they have defeated the Meneans, the Medes, and now Elam. They control Babylon with Shamash-Shumukin, Ashurbanipal's brother, in charge. So is this now the time for peace, perhaps?
Yeah. Remember when we said it probably wasn't a good idea for Esarhaddon to split up his kingdom between the brothers.
Oh.
Well, this is why I said I don't know if that's going to work out so well, because now Shamash-Shumukin thinks, he decides he's going to rebel against his brother.
But he has been a good guy for so long, right? He's been,
yeah, just quiet anyway.
He's been, no? The Babylonians have been whispering in his ears.
I'm sure. And we know there was a lot of Assyrians had a lot of spies too, so they, you know, try to keep track of things. If this is 652, we know this is 652, and this is definitely the biggest event of the decade, and definitely one of the biggest events of the whole history of the Neo-Assyrian Empire. I mean, if you just, you know, do a quick 10-minute overview of the Neo-Assyrian Empire, this is going to be a big part of it.
It's kind of the beginning of the end, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how they look at it. So you know, they realized that Shamash-Shumukin's, he was definitely actually a Babylonian. His mother was Babylonian. Ashurbanipal's mother was most likely Assyrian, which is a good reason why they split it up that way. And maybe thought, you know, a Babylonian king will be better. The Babylonians will like him. And apparently they did like him so much, and he liked them so much, he decided to have a revolution. He became an actual Babylonian and hate the Assyrians.
Yeah.
They said, during his reign, there was a lot of, there was a good economic prosperity, everybody was happy, and they must have gotten his ear. So whatever reason, he went native, and he was tired of being disrespected by Ashurbanipal, and he rebelled. And it was a civil war, it was literally brother against brother.
And it's such a bad time for the empire.
Really? We have some dates for these events. I used Cambridge Ancient History, which had dates.
Yeah.
And they used the Babylonian Chronicles because the Babylonian Chronicles come back. So I used theirs there for these dates. So the official start, we have actual dates, February 23, 652 BC. On this date, Ashurbanipal wrote to the citizens of Babylon in order to detach them from their allegiance to the king. So in other words, the plot was discovered.
So Ashurbanipal's spies discovered this was coming.
Correct. Right, right. And then it took 8 months until the formal outbreak of hostilities. So that was October 19th, 652. He probably had to see who was on his side and who was on his brother's. Get up his truth strength again, make his arrows, all that stuff. So 8 months preparation for war.
That's a long time.
Yeah. I mean, we just saw the battling they had going on. The Cambridge Ancient History feels that was, you know, who's on what side? What cities are against this? And what's, you know, it wasn't like they could pick up the phone and say, who are you with? They had to, you know, find out what was what.
So is anyone in Babylonia on Ashurbanipal's side?
Yeah, there are some. In the south, their main support was in the non-tribal urban south, Kisik, Kulub, Eridu, and Shatadadin, and some other local allies.
Okay.
Yeah, so they were on his side. And then outside of Babylonia, the Elamites and the Arabs seem to generally have supported the cause of Babylon and Shamash-shum-ukin. Definitely a lot of espionage, cultural divisions, ethnic divisions.
I guess Ashurbanipal's treatment of the Elamites did not help.
No, no. And yeah, exactly. So unfortunately, too, this revolution is going to go past 650. So we're going to get the conclusion in the next decade. But we do have a lot of fighting now. So yeah, with the hostilities started October 652, and then in the north, the Babylonian forces were checked, and they had to retreat in just 3 weeks back to Babylon. So it looks like they attacked. They started moving first. So then they were checked, and the next month there were two major battles. There's some Elamite troops still around. They sent troops to help Shamash-shum-ukin, and they were defeated on the Tigris and Mankisu, which is near modern-day Baghdad. So
does this mean that these Elamite troops were controlled by the people that Ashurbanipal actually put in power in Elam?
Yeah, yeah. There's a whole bunch of they keep boom, boom, boom. They keep they do rebel against them after he put them in power.
Even though they saw what he will do with people who defy him.
I just can't understand. It's amazing. I can't. When we go in the time machine, let's ask them.
Maybe Shamash-shum-ukin seemed super powerful at this point, that you were like, this guy's going to win. Let's beat up the Assyrians.
Right. And I bet there's a lot of mad Elamites. And so if you're the king and you're like, came from Assyria, and there's a whole bunch of mad Elamites because the Assyrians just kicked their butts, they're probably going to kill you if you don't do something. And, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Just, yeah. People. So there's another battle at Kirit in the province of Sippar on December 27th, and the Babylonian army suffered a serious defeat.
Huh.
And 651, or could be in the first beginning of 650, Arab troops arrived in Babylon to help shore up the city of Babylon. So Arabs, that wasn't a good idea for them. We'll find out some bad stuff going to happen to them later.
Why do the Arabs care? Of course, they have been fighting the Assyrians at times,
mm-hmm.
but they have been mostly left alone.
Mm-hmm.
But they have been forced to send tributes. Mm. Yeah, maybe they are tired of this Assyrian domination too.
It does comes to me. It comes down to me to be like bad information. They, you know, we don't have information like we have today, and so they just, you know, whoever tells, no, the Assyrians are almost dead. They're almost gone.
We better help Shamash-shum-ukin.
Right. We'll give you money. You won't have to pay this anymore. Hmm. You know, it seems to be the thing. I do have some scholarly papers that I got to get through just, and you know, because they're not like definitive, this thing or that thing, I don't always get to them for the research, but there is one about rebellions, why people would rebel. So I have to go through that.
That's interesting because there are so many rebellions against the Assyrians.
Right. Right. I mean, even in his, you know, even in Israel, and then Judah, and then Judah fought them, and then they didn't. But then the Judahites fought the Babylonians, and that wasn't a good idea.
That's another thing the Persians will get right when their time comes.
Yeah, correct. You're right. You're right. They did learn from that. So yeah, so there's Arabs in Babylon in 651. And there was, so obviously the Babylonians had all these setbacks, but they did continue to fight in the urban and the rural areas. And in 651, they succeeded in capturing Kutha. Within a few months, before the end of 651, the Assyrians captured Nippur in central Babylonia. And then by 650, the Assyrians put Babylon under siege. And then that's why the Arabs were there helping out. So, yeah, in this northern theater, most of the action in the field took place in this 18 months between October 652 and April 650. And after that time, the Assyrians were in control of the countryside, and they settled down to sieges of the cities Babylon, Borsippa, Kutha, and Sippar. But then in the south, the pro-Assyrian cities in Babylonia were under attack. So Assyria was never really under attack, just the pro-Assyrian cities in Babylonia. And it seems only Uruk was reinforced with Assyrian troops. And it seems that Uruk was the staging area for Ashurbanipal's forces in the south. We learned that early in the war, the Sealanders, always the Sealanders, and the Pukudu tribe, they controlled the south, and they were seriously pressing on the pro-Assyrians in Babylonia.
Good and actually,
Yep, and then the home of Merodach Baradan. We find Ur is in trouble. They held out against famine and the enemy for at least 2 years. And a letter was sent to Ashurbanipal from Ur begging for troops and warning that the wealth of his ancestors had given to the temple of Sin, the patron god of Ur, would fall into enemy hands. And they even found legal texts at Ur dated to 650 that show men selling their property rights to raise money for food. So we know the situation in Ur is still doesn't get resolved. It's under siege and they're starving. And the Sealanders were under control of a grandson of Merodach Baladan. His name is Nabu Belshamati. Maybe he's the guy that got chopped up in Elam. You know, I mean, it's just all this weird chronology, but he's a grandson of Merodach Baladan, and he's, you know, in charge down there.
Oh, obviously, he wasn't cut up in Elam.
No.
His father, no. His son that was chopped up?
I mean, maybe he was cut up after, but he wasn't cut up when we thought he was, because Ashurbanipal just puts all this stuff together on one, you know, story.
Why would you think it was the same guy? Isn't it another?
Yeah, it's true. He's the grandson. The other one was the great-grandson. So
So maybe this was the father and the guy was chopped up was the...
Yeah, this is the guy, his son. That's true. That's what I actually wrote here. Yes, his son was the one who got chopped up.
Well, that would make him pretty anti-Assyrian.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think, yeah. There's not much reason to live at that point. I mean, I wouldn't care.
Also, with that legacy, that granddad was the arch-enemy of Assyria, so...
Your great grandfather fought the Assyrians, and so gosh darn it, you will fight them too.
Yes. Go Nabu Belshamati.
Go after them. So the south is still in play at the end of 650. Then Ashurbanipal and the Assyrians had the north pretty much sewn up, but the south was still in play. Babylon is under siege. Ur is under siege. The Sealanders are fighting down there, and that's where we leave it, at 650.
Well, Ashurbanipal is pretty much winning then.
Correct.
Except that he has some mopping up to do.
Correct, unless maybe there's a miracle.
Well, that was that decade.
Yep, I mean, we're leaving it sort of at a cliffhanger. You could assume that the Assyrians are going to be what's going to happen. But what happens to Shamash-shum-ukin? There is some drama in this 640s, I promise.
Yeah, what will happen to the Elamites who defied Ashurbanipal again?
Oh, boy.
This is worse than sending insults to him, but helping his brother's rebellion.
Right. The Arabs, he's not going to be happy with the Arabs. He's not going to be happy with the Elamites. And there's probably some other things we'll find. I'm going to try to cover some of Deuteronomy in the 640s too.
All right.
So make sure you tune into the 640s because we're going to be, like Dan said, we're going to try to get this out every other week. So
we sure will.
Yeah, so if you know anything on the 640s you want to send me, send it along, please.
Thanks for all your great work, Bernie.
Oh, thank you. I enjoy doing it, as you know.
And speak to you next time.
Yeah, speak to you next time. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just a dollar an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.